I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Charles Officer joins me now, the acclaimed filmmaker's latest, Unarmed Versus, will be screening at the Vancouver International Film Festival the 4th and 6th of October. The film won the Best Canadian Feature Documentary Award at Hot Docs 2017. It's a poignant and uplifting film about a family in northeast Toronto who are about to leave the low-income housing block for a redevelopment project that could bar them from coming back later on. We meet Francine Valentine, a precocious girl whose insight on community, life, love, and the city around her touch and inspire the viewer. She joins a local arts workshop where she can work on poetry and music, all the while helping her family run the house and navigate the bureaucracy of social housing. I'll get Mr. Officer to tell us about how he came to do this film and tell these stories. We see the Art Starts organization in Toronto in action, and the young lives that benefit from their mentorship, including Francine. The film will also have a theatrical run in Toronto as it screens here at VIFF. Charles Officer's previous films include When Morning Comes, Nurse Fighter Boy, and Mighty Jerome, which won numerous awards, including 4 Leo Awards. Visit the National Film Board of Canada's website, nfb.ca, for more information. VIFF.org is where you'll get tickets for the screenings here in Vancouver. The October 6th screening at the Rio will feature Charles in attendance. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Charles Officer. Mr. Officer, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good yourself.
Good, thank you.
You're bringing this film to Vancouver, where your previous film, Mighty Jerome, did quite well here, didn't it?
Yes. I was lucky to make my first film on the National Film Board, which was, Mighty Jerome was a great experience, my first feature documentary, and it was really great to, as a Torontonian, connect with a story on the West Coast that, you know, that sometimes we don't get the opportunities to.
Your film, Unarmed Versus, as I was telling you just before we started, is such a lovely and powerful film at the same time. Your gifts, obviously, as a filmmaker, shine through in the way that you are able to capture this community and capture these people. But I guess at the heart of it is Francine, because that's how the film starts, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's in our sort of catalog of Canadian cinema, we hardly see or have any films in the archive that is really from the perspective of a 12-year-old black girl, you know, in an urban city. So it was, she is the light and she is the guide and she's the film.
Yeah, and I guess I want to know, how did you come across her? How long did it take until you were starting this project and then you found Francine and decided that she would be sort of the center of the film, the heart of the film?
Yeah, I mean, it was, initially the film, when it was presented or the idea around what I was going to explore, I really wanted to locate a community in the city that was a Toronto community housing, low-income community that we don't often hear about within our city. There are ones that arrive on the news every now and then, but then there's ones that are constantly talked about. And so I set out to find that community and was lucky to find Villeways, which is located in the northern part of Toronto, and it's really kind of surrounded by quite a wealthy area. I mean, there's there's a beautiful ravine, there's this, you know, beautiful area, but just this little pocket was this community called Villeways that if you blink, you'll miss it.
Yeah.
You know, if you've never heard of it, you never will. Like, you know, it's one of those little places in the city, and when I planted myself there on the first night, I actually did do that. I saw this microcosmic world where these youth were looking after each other, and they're all congregating in this one townhouse that was called a rec center. Really shabby little room, you know. And it took a while. I spent about a year and a half in this community building relationships before I brought a camera in there. But in that year and a half, I was able to write it and conceive of the story and who I was going to, you know, really focus on. And very early on, I met Francine, this quiet, shy young girl. She was 11 when I met her, and she, you know, could barely hear her talk. But when you did hear the words she was speaking, for myself, it made me stop and pay attention. There was an old soul in there that just had to come out, and so we built a relationship, and it's amazing now. She's 14, like, it's crazy. That we were able to build it and make this film together.
She's incredibly wise, perceptive, and intuitive, not only of the world around her, this community, and how important it is to her and other people, but definitely the people around her, especially. I mean, she does the chores to get the house going, and
yeah.
But at the same time, she's emotionally just so. I'm bereft of words. Just she knows how to care for the people in the ways that they probably didn't think that they needed to be cared for.
Yes. She's a caregiver, and she's so young. So in this film, I mean, she plays, like, you know, the caregiver. She's also a child. She's also a daughter. She's, like, she has to shift these different roles. And it's like when you see, you know, young kids who have to grow up a certain way, some have to grow up faster. They have to get in tune with understanding that they've got to be caregivers too. And she's, you know, not a selfish child, and doesn't have a lot, you know. But she's very giving and looks after. That's what blew my mind the first day I was there. She was looking after the young one. She was 11,
yeah.
And she was looking after the 6-year-old. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, this is very interesting. She really stood out. She has to, and she's kind of like, you know, I would say she's like the hope of that family, you know, in a way, like, you know, that family's success moving forward, as, you know, with an 80, you know, 5-year-old grandmother and a father who's also trying to get his constitution together, and as immigrants in this country, it's like, she's the hope, you know?
Yeah.
So I found that what she presented to me as a sort of, you know, beacon of hope.
Now, because she is quiet and shy when we first meet her, how do you get to know her, or how does she get to know you, so that you're able to get in there and film her, and get her inner thoughts? Because a lot of the film is not only her talking to you or talking to the camera, she's talking to herself, trying to figure out stuff, trying to figure out poetry and the sort. And it's marvelous to see how she figures out stuff on her own. And so how do you get to that point where she's able to trust you to get your camera in there, say?
I mean, a lot of, you know, this film, this process specifically with this particular film, which is a new approach. I haven't made a film like this, but it was a lot of stuff happens off camera. In terms of the time that you spend building a relationship and trust and trying to, because, you know, she's young and, you know, she kept asking me, like, will this play on YouTube? You know, like, you know, and so they didn't know my work, didn't know, like, the scope of what I was trying to achieve. So even, you know, a camera's being pointed at her, she doesn't really know. So that was also really great, because she would just go into her own private solitude. And we were just able to be there with her. But I don't think that, you know, if I just jammed a camera in her face from the first time I met her, I don't think she would have. We had to ease into that, and had to get her parents, like her parents' consent to even spend time for a 12-year-old girl to allow, like, a guy like me with a camera crew into her bedroom. Like, that's a big deal,
yeah.
You know. So those sort of things in the shoot were kind of really mapped out in my head that we'd get to later. So I had to map out, in a way, the structure of shooting the film with how our relationship was building and engaging her comfort level with things. There's things that I left out of the film at the end of the day that I felt like, you know, maybe would have been great for an audience or for the film at a certain level. For this young, protecting this young girl's private space at the same time was really at the forefront of, like, my every intention. So we talked a lot. We talked a lot, and I try to break down to her the essence of what, you know, or we're talking about her mother, or we're talking about who she misses, or relationship with her father, and what she thinks of, like, you know, revitalization, what it means to her, and all those sort of things were happening at times when I'd be just spending days with her, having, and we'd have a conversation, and I'd film that conversation, and then I'd film her doing other things, and, you know, that she was doing that day, but it was really, like, she was, you know, and the amazing thing I have to say about this young girl as well, because I've worked with, you know, actors as well, and she just has a natural ability to, when she's doing something, she goes into doing that thing, and the world evaporates around her.
Yeah.
So it was really beautiful that she was able to, the Edgar Allan Poe, I mean, it was just a day where I'm like, you know, going to film me do some homework. I had no idea what her homework was.
Yeah.
I had no idea she was going to pull out this book that I can't even break down. Like, and to watch her naturally do her, that's how she does her homework and how she thinks, it blew my mind. And I'm like, yep, that's got to be the introduction. That tells a lot about a person through how they're thinking, you know. It was she's magic, and I was very lucky that the cinema gods out there, that they aligned me with this young girl.
Yeah, you mentioned the world evaporating around her when she's mesmerized and in her own world, and you see that. You see that when she's at Art Starts, this program that I'll get you to tell us about in just a sec. But you also see that when she's at the museum there and seeing the artwork around her. And she even says at one point she doesn't understand it, but she realizes how important it is to her at that moment, because she learns about herself and what's possible in the world of art for her.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, Jean-Michel Basquiat, like, when I first showed him, or showed, like, the group of youth and as well her, the image of this artist, their faces dropped.
Yeah.
Because they were like, this guy with the dreadlock hair, like, who's, he made what? He's an artist? Like, you could be in, it was this interesting moment, and she had no clue who he was, and then her intrigue built. She wants to know more. So then we went and we arranged for her to go to the AGO. And it's like, and to see her go through that sort of work and analyze it and take it in, and just thinking of it one way, but at the end of it, it's like, she's like, I could never do all that. Like, you know, it was inspiring for her. And this whole question about art for myself, because it has been an integral part of my own personal life, but I don't impose that on others. So one of the questions that I had making the film was what good is art program if kids are hungry or not, or can't read? Because I've also, you know, questioned, like, art programs that get funding, and then these kids, and they go in, and sometimes, you know, not saying that they're well-intended, but it's more about the people who are putting on feeling good rather than seeing the follow through of the youth of where it really takes them.
Right.
And so it happens that Art Starts has been this art program that's been on in Toronto for a number of years, and they've been in this community for about 5 years or so. And so when I landed there as well, I connected very quickly with the organizers and of the program and actively to collaborate, because I found that it was the one time that all the youth in the entire community, that two groups come in, the younger ones under 12 and the ones 12 and up, and they'd be there and they'd be making stuff and engaging, and actually get fed a little bit of food, and they're looked after, and it's like this whole community of youth that are, but you can see that they're busting the seams, and some of them want to do other things, and you know, the program doesn't offer everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I posed a question to some of the youth, like, what would you like to do? And music was really came up. So, you know, in collaboration with Art Starts, we created an 8-week program. And we had, you know, a pretty large group start out, but as it got, you know, those 8 weeks, like, you fell away, you know. And Francine was actually supposed to be in a younger group, but she wanted to be with these in this other group, and as terrified as she was, and you've seen the film, and her finding, like, you know, her voice and writing and stuff, like, it was a massive turning point for her and those youth to actually step into they thought I got a I'd get a recording studio that was in the basement. And when some of them were like, "Whoa, this is professional. This is real."
Yeah.
And that kind of really, really did something in terms of the work that they produced.
Yeah, and so there's a moment in the film where it comes time to, she's preparing her piece to be recorded. It's a musical piece, it's spoken word as well. And she's in the recording booth, and she's nervous, just as any kid would be, to do this. And it's so riveting, because you're really rooting for her. You know that it is important at one. And then at another, well, it's not that important. And you know, you buy into her, to her excuse that it, you know, she is nervous and she is embarrassed by it all. But it's so riveting in that, you know, you wait for it to happen because you know it will happen because she is that remarkable and that she can overcome whatever nervousness she has.
Yeah.
And so at that moment, what's it like for you to be there and to film that and to see that on the screen? I mean, has she told you about how she's felt since about seeing that moment where she's sort of in distress and overcoming that, say?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like these little movements that are massive movements in our lives that affect us, like, you know, a little movement like that will translate itself 15 years from now when she's applying for a job at some company, you know, like these sort of things of like, you know, that sort of confidence and understanding that, you know, and I have to go through it too, especially, you know, you work in the arts or whatever, that we get it. We create these anxieties around some things and they're big hurdles for us to step over. But once we step over it, it's like the world doesn't blow up. Like
you don't die of embarrassment.
Like,
you know,
you die, yeah. Like, you know, you still wake up tomorrow, like, but in those moments, they're so big, and especially when you're young, you know, it's hard to expose yourself. It's hard to speak, you know, unarmed, so to speak, like, just to not have the armor up and to reveal yourself in front of people. And so that is, you know, an important thing for me when I'm looking at it, the overall scheme of youth, that when it comes to their voices, when they see something, that they have the courage to go and stand in front of a counselor, that they have the courage to go and address the mayor, they have the courage to go and address the prime minister, like, because they are confident in their thoughts and in their articulation. But you have to learn that. You know, it doesn't come naturally for all of us. You know, the best of us. So when you're also in a community that grow up in a place where you're peered upon a certain way and there's a stigma attached to you, it is not asking for your voice or your opinion. And in this world right now, for our youth, I think in the way that the planet is moving and some things that we can actually, you know, we say our youth are our hope. Well, let's develop their voices, you know, so they feel that they can have the confidence to speak out on things when they are actually troublesome, you know. So that to me is the biggest mission. It's not even about the music and her making us like recording. It's about her voice and the validity of it, and understanding for herself that it matters, you know.
Yeah, you've got to give the young people, especially Francine, the space to speak out. Otherwise, they won't speak out.
They won't. And so, and when no one's speaking out, you know, when the aliens come and attack us, you know, and no one's speaking out, well, then who's going to save us?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it's a real necessary skill and something that should be learned and taught and nurtured by us, you know, adults.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, what's the state of Villa Ways today?
Well, now it is demolished. It is completely flattened. There's nothing left there but rubble, and they are now excavating to dig into the ground. So everyone's been relocated and moved off the property. Every single person, and they've been relocated around the city in other Toronto community housing neighborhoods. And, you know, some aren't safe. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, But it's challenging for, you know, young folks to move into new neighborhoods where there's already people there that are will look at you suspiciously and where are you from and what are you doing here and this is where I live. You don't belong. Like, there's all kinds of these things that happen. I mean, they're happening in the United States, you know, in our most civilized sort of spaces.
Yeah.
So, and young people, you know, they need guidance, and they're territorial, too. Like, so this community has been, you know, dismantled for reasons that I know that are positive and negative.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, it's like, you know, the powers that be, and again, you know, businesses is at the core of why this place was neglected to begin with, why it needs to be completely torn down and rebuilt. You know, and it has a lot to do with the people who live there.
Oh.
You know, like it's clear as day as an adult man now that you know the neglect of these community lower income neighborhoods, they're neglected because the people don't really give two shits about them.
Yeah. You know? And so now that the film's been out for a while, and people here in Vancouver can see it and understand in the same week, Toronto will be able to see it in theaters. What have the people that you depict in the film, that you show in the film, especially Francine, what have they thought about it?
You know, Francine has been the hardest customer from the get-go because, it's taken her time to adjust to, first of all, seeing herself in every scene almost,
mm-hmm.
seeing herself so large, to hearing her own voice and what she really sounds like. So, you know, from the first screening to our Hot Dogs premiere, there's been a lot of growth. But the beautiful thing is that now that she's a little older and she has some distance, if you've grown, she's already in that phase now of looking back as like that's someone who I've grown from. You know, it didn't start like that.
Yeah.
I would honestly say that the community, the youth involved, the adults, they've all been really thankful, and not to pat itself on the back, but they really have felt, you know, as much as I don't include the voices of a lot of the adults in the community and so on, that they felt that Francine spoke for them.
Mm.
And they're very, you know, grateful that actually their story is traveling and connecting with other communities and countries too, where the same thing is happening. Same thing's happening in Seoul, Korea.
Right.
Same thing is happening in Vancouver. Same thing is happening. It started in, you know, Afro-Pavilion in the East Coast in the 60s. It's like they're, you know, it's just amazing to me at times that the way that we structure our business practices from the past to now, the evolution of what we can do, of what we're capable of doing today, I feel like, you know, there aren't any excuses in a way now.
Yeah.
You know, we have the resources to get the intel. We have the resources to have proper conversations about things. We had the technology. We can build it. You know, so I think if we're using this word community and throwing it around so much, well, the community should be separate from the business practice. Because you can't be like, you know, talking about community and actually not actually having a communal sort of perspective or intention with the projects that you're doing. It's just a contradiction, you know.
And I'm watching this film and I'm thinking, because you mentioned a moment ago how much Francine is a hope for her family. What a hope she is for all of us, don't you think? That there's a young person like that.
I'm so glad. Thank you for saying that, because that's it. This is I can see her, like, she's probably going to become a lawyer.
Yeah.
And she, you know, in her future, art's going to take her somewhere, but she's a smart, you know, young woman. I think that her head is going to go in a direction. She might even become an MP, a member of parliament. She might go, you know, she is a great hope for all of us. And I think that, you know, people who have a genuine sort of space of caring and in our hard world where that gets kind of beat out of people, it's a beautiful thing to witness and understand that it exists, and hopefully, you know, she'll really carry that on, you know.
She's someone we need, don't we?
I think so.
You've done a marvelous service in bringing her to us and bringing these necessary voices that need to be heard, but most of all, entertaining us with such a beautiful film. Congratulations on it, and as I say, I guess in the theatrical word, break a leg is that this film gets seen across the country, and especially here at VIFF next week.
Thank you so, so much. I really appreciate it. I really, truly do. Thank you.
Visit VIFF.org for tickets. Charles Officer, the filmmaker, joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.